How's everybody doing? Traffic bad? Not so? Yeah. About what we would expect for a Tuesday night, rainy kind of thing. So, all right. Tell you what, we'll start out. We'll just do a little bit, a few minutes of kind of calming down, a little mindfulness, count our breathing, and we can talk after that. So get yourself comfortable. For he who sits on the floor, you know, if you sit on your pillow with your hips down a little bit or your knees down a little bit, that's good. It helps keep your back straight. People are sitting in a chair. Remember the 7 points? We got them down pretty good. Feet, back, arms, top of your head, your jaw, mouth, tongue, and eyes. That's more than 7, probably. They're all in there. Is this first night for anybody? Okay. Well, you're sitting about right. Have you done this before?
Meditate?
Yeah.
Oh, tried it.
Okay. So you look pretty comfortable. That's about it. That's what we want. All right, so then we're going to take a few breaths in and out. And your eyes can either be closed or partially open. And if they're open a little bit, focus on a spot. We take a couple of breaths in and out. Now we're just going to focus on our breathing. Set your intention. We'll talk more about that this evening. But remember why you came here tonight. Then you can either imagine your mind like the sky, like the meditation we did last week, like the ocean. You can count your breathing. If you so choose, there's a number that you can pick from. If a thought or an emotion rises, just let it go. Okay, bring your mind back to the room. I found a really good quote this week. I was in a... How did everybody do? Has everybody been practicing or having some opportunity to do some quiet time, some meditation during the week? You find it difficult to find the time? Are you finding it easier to find the time? Are you finding you're a little bit more interested or excited or motivated to find the time? You haven't found anything. Any thoughts? Somebody's got to say something beside me. I've learned I can be quiet a long time. Yes, sir.
Longer meditations seem to be working better and enjoying them more.
I'm sorry, the long...
Going for like the 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes even the 30 or 40 minutes, like, just get more value out of it.
Oh, good, good. So you're going that long? Excellent. Have you done meditation part of this? You have? Okay. But the longer ones are finding more benefit in it. Anybody else? Any thoughts on anything? Experiences? Anybody having a hard time still? They're struggling with it? Are the struggles in do your mind too excited, or do you find yourself kind of drifting off, or both? It's the thoughts?
It's the monkey mind.
Okay. But you see that that's the problem. Okay. What time, when are you doing it? In the morning, or?
I try different times of the day. I do have the time.
Okay.
But it doesn't seem to matter. As soon as I sit down, it's like I'm open to reams of
Yeah.
And
you try to draw your mind back?
I try to bring it back to the breath.
Okay. Is it getting easier? Okay. That's fine. Yeah. But you recognize that that's happening. That's huge. I know that doesn't seem like much. You know, I think the thing is we often want to... We think that we're supposed to have control over that, and we're supposed to be able to sit and watch our breath for extended periods of time. They call it, you know, single-pointed concentration. And that's just not going to happen for a while, okay? You'll get better at it and better at it. But it's really huge to recognize that your mind is moving. It feels uncomfortable, I think, because it feels like I don't have control. But what's reassuring is knowing that prior to your practice, you didn't have control, but you didn't know it. You know? I know it sounds kind of crazy, but once you begin to recognize my mind's taken off, that's really a huge step. So that's when you begin to develop this kind of metacognitive process. You know, the first part is awareness. And then as you get better at that, it's analysis. You know, we begin to pick and choose. You know, we see all this stuff come up, and we begin to kind of pick and choose and watch them go by. And then at some point, you begin to be able to recognize, I can regulate that in picking the ones I want and letting go of the ones I don't like.
When you say picking the ones I want, the analysis, because I did get that book on how to meditate.
Uh-huh.
That
could be. That could be, yeah. A lot of it, I think, is just... yeah, I mean, it manifests in different ways. when we see things, you know, Jill, the person who had been coming here, and she's going to be teaching some of these classes too. We were talking after last class, and one method that she uses is, you know, she gets in an interaction with somebody that doesn't go so well, and then she kind of this observer, right, that we're beginning to awaken. The observer says, "Wait, time out," like a director of a movie, and kind of pans back and says, "All right, let's play that again, and let's change it up a little bit." And so, you know, she does that a few times, and she'll turn a bad situation into, "All right, let's run this play again, this scene again, and this time the person you had a confrontation with, our goal is to make them happy." And so you can begin to kind of change your interactions and the way you perceive yourself in the world.
And that's in the course of the meditation?
That will come over time. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Keeping in mind that when I'm faced with that interaction again, I may revert to my old habits. Okay? But being aware that those are my old habits. Did I tell a story about the guy walking down the street? Okay. I tell these things so many times, I forget. My memory's shot anyway. So there's a story, you know, a man walking down the street and he falls into a hole. And then he pulls himself out and he goes on his way. And the next day he's walking down the street to work and he falls in the hole again. And he remembered that he fell in that hole. Gets out, goes on his way. The third day he's walking down the street and he goes, "Oh, here comes that hole." And he falls into it. The fourth day he stops himself and goes around the hole. And the fifth day he takes a whole different way to work. So we're still falling in a hole and recognizing that we're falling in a hole. And it'll take us a while to say, "Oh, here comes that thing that I see, that emotion that I've called anger." And we're able to kind of recognize that when this thing, anger, comes up, I act a certain way, and I can change the way I act. It may take some effort, but I can change the way I act, and the results will be different. The outcome of that interaction will change, okay? We're really creatures of habit. We're really creatures of habit. We've practiced being mindless and angry and all those other kind of things all our lives. So it's going to take us a while to practice undoing those things. And it's just simply that. And the first step is realizing I have a choice. And there was a thing I was reading this morning. It said one of the whole purposes of the mindfulness is to recognize that there's space between the perturbation or whatever the stimulus is and my response. There's space in there. And at first it's just a little bit of space. It's like, "Oh, here comes that hole." And then you can kind of stretch that space out and realize that there's room for me to make choices. And the choices that I make will determine where the outcomes. You know, I tell us to the kids in the prison, you know, the choices that you make will determine whether you get out of here or you stay here longer. You know, it's really like that. And I said, it's no different when you get out. Throughout your life, you know, you always have these choices. And we can begin to include some wisdom in making those choices. So that's kind of a dissertation on. But yeah, when we start out, it's just going to be seeing it. Okay, and seeing it is huge. It really is. Yes, sir.
Alright, so when you said, let's take anger for example.
Uh-huh.
If you're meditating and maybe you had like a bad confrontation with someone earlier, and so you're replaying that situation in your head or it pops up.
Right.
Like so are you saying while you're sitting down, analyze it then? Is that what you said?
You can.
If I did that, then that would eventually lead me to like even further thoughts. Whereas if I just stay maybe like constant, like would be more mindful and just like let it go. And then maybe I'll just go back to like letting it drift by, right? That the anger thought drift by. Then after that meditation, I can see that was like a harmful thought or emotion. And then after that, I can realize like, oh, well, that was kind of futile for me to be angry at this person.
That's right.
Instead of analyzing it while in the meditation, because then I feel like my mind would just keep going and I wouldn't be able to like have that objective view on my mind.
Okay. So your mind would make you more angry?
Or it might just like lead to other paths and like I kind of like lose that awareness. I'll just get like in the train of thought.
Okay.
And start analyzing.
That's right.
While I'm meditating.
Okay. So some of the meditations that we do are let's let go. You know, so the first part is being able to, here comes a thought, here comes an emotion, let it drift on by. And so there's a concentration piece of this where we're building the muscle. You know, I use this physical analogy. So we're building our mental muscle, the neurological connections, quite literally, that allow us to observe these things and not get hooked onto them. Okay? That's part of it. And we can develop that very strongly. The other part of it is picking those thoughts and drilling in on them and either creating and drilling in on the ones and strengthening the ones that make us feel good and weakening or letting go of the ones that make us feel bad. The ones that make us feel bad, we have an affinity towards those sometimes. We feel some self-righteousness in our anger, right? Especially if we think we're right, you know? You know? I have the right to be angry about this thing. But it doesn't serve us very well. You know, in the short term, we think it gives us a little rush or something. And we'll play that story over and over and over and over again, right? But it doesn't really serve us very well. So we begin to recognize that story creates problems for us, and we can change our story. We can let go of that one and pick something different.
Okay, so going back to the example I just used, like,
yes.
As you had an angry confrontation earlier, and that comes up, when you say drill into it, do you mean, like, kind of analytically take it apart, or do you mean just kind of, like, rest your attention on it and see what comes from that?
Could be both, and I'll do an analytical meditation here this evening. We'll kind of experience that a little bit. So we'll find something to drill in on, and we'll evaluate that afterwards. So, all right, that might help. Other comments or thoughts? Yes, sir. Give me a for instance there, like classical music or something, or like the sounds or.
There are a number of
Right. Right.
Music,
yeah.
Classical music would be probably another example.
You know. I love music. I don't. It doesn't work well for me, but it may for some people. And I don't think that there's a problem in that. I can listen to some Tibetan chants sometimes, which is kind of strange. I mean, they're not really in and of themselves melodic. But there's nothing wrong with that. And if you can still do the meditation despite the music. If it doesn't distract you, though, you could use something like that as another form of concentration, sound consciousness. So you're just focused just on the music. I'm sure that's an acceptable practice, like you would on a visualization, which is sight consciousness, right? You could probably use the sound consciousness. And there's a lot of people that, you know, there's outdoor sounds, right? The ocean and the birds and stuff. That if I'm outside, I begin to pick apart those sounds and things too. So, you know, it's really whatever works. It's really whatever works. The idea is just being mindful in the present moment and being aware. The whole purpose is to be familiar with our own minds that we're really not very familiar with. We're really not. We think we are, you know, but in reality, we're not. Most of us. I'm not anyway. I don't know. Maybe some of you are, but I'm not. So, other thoughts or questions? If you've been doing this regularly, do you find that addiction's not the right term, I guess. Do you find yourself drawn? We had somebody. Yeah, you were talking last week about how when you didn't meditate, you noticed that you missed it. Are other people beginning to experience that if you're doing it regularly? Are you? Other people? Yeah? Good. Yeah, it really is. It'll start to draw you in. Our minds are amazing things. I mean, they really are amazing things. And given the fact that they are and how unfamiliar we are with our minds, that just kind of blows me away. I was thinking the other day about everything that we see man-made came from somebody's thought, you know? Something that bobbed up may not have been a meditation session, but something that bobbed up that was developed and analyzed and worked into something that exists around us, you know. So to become familiar with our minds are really amazing. The minds can do some really beneficial things and some really destructive things too. You know? It's like that elephant and that tonka out there. It really is. And most of the time we just kind of go wherever it wants to go, right? And we kind of go along with it. So to begin a little bit to recognize that thing I can begin to kind of control a little bit is pretty powerful. So one of the things I wanted to talk about, let's see if I found a quote. Don't worry. So this was in Alan Wallace's book that I was reading this morning, and it was in meditation, and I thought I made a note for this class. He said, don't worry about what you see. Somebody talked about, you know, when we were trying to visualize the sky, it was a different color than what they were trying to get. It couldn't do it blue. We could do black or something. So don't worry about what you see, the color of the background, the sky, etc. Because everyone's experience is different and has its own validity. The goal is to observe your own experience. Okay? So that's back to what you were talking about. It, you know, we all have different experiences when we do this. The goal of this is to observe our own experiences, which often go unobserved. So you can't do it wrong. You know, you can't do it wrong. So everybody's doing good. have you practiced with some of the different meditations in the handouts, or anything kind of set better with you than others, or nothing in particular? 9 round, does that resonate with somebody? It doesn't really with me, but it might. I mean, some people love that, so I just wondered if... Pardon me?
I can't recall it.
We might have done it last week, so it's one of the handouts. You breathe in through one nostril and out through the other, and then you switch, and then it's through both. Yeah, yeah. So that some people really... Yeah, I have sinus problems too. Oh, good, good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Maybe I should try to resonate with it more. That might do me some good. So, setting up your sessions, do you have a place that you kind of designate that you're going to sit at? And does that make a difference for you? Yes. Uh-huh.
It's a park bench.
Oh,
the
good.
The sun hits it at that time, and I find that to be just ideal for me.
Oh, good, good. All right, perfect.
I can't wait till it gets warmer so I can do it every day.
Yeah, yeah. Are you all right with it in the rain and stuff, too?
No, I'm chicken.
Okay. How about other people have a place kind of set aside for it? Yes? Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, it's funny. Because we think of this, you know, sitting on a pillow. It's kind of an ideal situation. And it really is. I mean, it's a perfect... But a lot of the teachers will say that it's easy to be mindful on a pillow. The real practice is when you're outside. And so, you know, I need a quiet spot. I need all that too. And it's funny because when something there's a noise, then I'm like, oh, don't they know I'm sitting up here meditating? You know, and then I realize, oh, that's my mind. It's messing with something. You know, so yeah. There are kind of four parts then that you want to include if you have kind of a designated area, or even if you don't, you know, at different times, whatever you experiment with, find something that resonates with you. But there's like a preparation, and this is one of the handouts too that describes these four steps. So the preparation. You know, when we sit down, you know, I try to get us all to take a few big breaths in and out. And sometimes I'll do this clear light going in and soot going out. And we're going to do that for a longer period of time here this evening for a little bit. So the idea is to kind of calm it down as much as possible, right? And get our mind settled and focused in on our seat. And then try to set your motivation. I don't do that a lot here, but the idea is remind yourself why you're doing this and really try to set a motivation. If you can make it as altruistic as possible, it really is helpful. So think about the people that'll benefit from you doing meditation. You know, your family that might begin to recognize, you know, you're a little bit more at peace all the time. You know, as you practice, you begin to kind of carry this peaceful aura with you. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but you actually will bring calm to certain situations that might not otherwise be calm. And it's a very subtle thing that'll begin to develop. But if you begin to set a motivation for why you're doing this. You know, sometimes I picture in the airlines, right, they tell you that the little oxygen masks fall down. If you're with an elderly or kid, put it on yourself first and then help them. So, you know, it's kind of like we're doing our own thing here for the sake that we can help other people at some point. So, and then, as altruistic as you can make it. And then the third step then would be actual, you know, the meditation itself. So we have the preparation, the motivation, actually doing the meditation for whatever length of time you decide to. And there's timers. I don't know if you have a little timer that you use, or if you wait. Sometimes I wait till my head begins to droop and I think it's time. But whatever, I don't know what, there's apps. There's phone apps that you can get that have little bells, you know, that you can set for 23 minutes, and they've got the same kind of little bell that dings at the end. So there's different options there. So do your meditation, and then at the end of it, it's important to do some sort of dedication to kind of seal it, you know, to kind of, it's like the shower after your workout, right? It's like, all right, I've done it. you know, and then go about your day. So if you do those four things, it kind of helps package it into something that's a little bit more concise and not just, oh, I'm going to see if I can just focus on my breathing for a little bit. So does that make sense? So. The dedication. Yeah, so, you know, dedicate it. Let's see, it says, dedicate the positive energy generated and the results that will ensure from your practice for the benefit of those around you. So you set the motivation for that, and then you kind of give the dedication mentally. You dedicate it to the same thing. So, or to whoever you want to, or whatever you want to. So it just kind of, again, puts bookends on it, you know, and makes it a concise kind of a practice. Any other thoughts?
I found that the most useful one for me is just trying to focus on the breathing.
Yeah.
Then it can... The more you try to concentrate on something that's simple, the more you realize your head's doing a million different things.
Uh-huh.
So I can notice in more of my, you know, normal life when my mind's doing a lot of different things instead of just being mindful of what I'm supposed to be doing. So just the breathing actually helps more than the sky or anything. If I'm using the sky, for example, I'm waiting for clouds of thoughts to come.
Yeah.
It seems like I'm waiting and I'm anticipating.
Okay.
Just trying to focus on the breathing when something comes up and I got to start over again.
Yeah. You
know? So then I actually notice it more than, oh, there's another cloud of thought that I knew was going to come anyway.
Yeah, and that's a good point. So whatever, you know, we've gone through a variety of different meditations. And again, the whole idea is just to observe. And whatever method works best for you is what you should kind of, you know, work with. Practice some of the other ones. Keep trying to do some of the other ones. But, you know, if it works for you, stick with it. And if it's making you said throughout the day, it makes you realize when you begin to kind of scatter, if you can kind of catch yourself, then that's a real big step. It really is. It's a real, real big step. So I want to break you up into groups and like twos or threes or whatever, and talk about maybe some of the benefits that you've noticed, if you have, and maybe some of the difficulties that you've had, and then we'll kind of talk about that in the group a little bit all together, okay? So you can move around. You used to have people sitting on the floor, but you may have to move around a little bit to get with somebody. Maybe get with somebody different, you know, if you're always hooking up with the same people.
Years ago, and for the island and dropping off. They've transferred us to another organization.
We good? We need more time? You can always use it, right? Should we get back? Talk a little bit? Does anybody have anything from their discussion they want to share? Insight? People have experiences during the day that they've noticed has helped? Not really. Or is it subtle? I said, do people have experiences where they've noticed that this has helped during the day? Or is it so subtle that we don't notice it, do you think? Pardon me? Don't notice it?
No.
Yeah.
Starting to notice more when kind of thoughts that are usually in the background come up.
Yeah.
Kind of usually obsessive thoughts that you don't notice until they're already overflowing usually.
Yeah.
It's getting easier to catch them earlier.
Okay. Good. Other thoughts? Other comments? Yes, sir.
A change while I'm reading. A lot of times, as I'm reading, I'll kind of drift off and start thinking about other things,
uh-huh.
and then realize, oh, I've been on the same page for like 5 minutes. I've noticed that I can see it happening and kind of pull myself back and focus a little bit more.
Oh, good. So you notice when you start to drift. Kind of like when you're watching your breathing, you notice when your mind's kind of gone away. Pull it back to what you're doing. All right. Other thoughts or ideas or things that you talked about that anybody will share? Yes, sir.
For me, I think it's helped the... Maybe emotional intelligence. That's the right word.
Yeah.
You're more aware of emotions that are rising instead of just being caught in that emotion and then it'll fester and grow. If you hit a bad one or if you want to. You can kind of catch it if it's negative.
Yeah.
I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. that. And also, I feel like I can, I'm still in school. I've noticed I can, my concentration is better, like, in class. I can concentrate, like, instead of, like, daydreaming while in class, I can focus on what they're saying in the lecture. And also, I think that, I can analytically, like, do and analyze my problems better, too.
Okay. Problems like in school?
Yeah. It's like
okay.
Thinking problems.
Okay.
Well, you have a better objective view on certain problems. Like, if you're having a discussion with somebody, instead of getting like so emotionally heated, you can listen to what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
And take a different perspective on what they're trying to say.
Okay.
Instead of being so kind of, I guess, egocentric and like trying to hold your ground.
Right.
And you can kind of like, step back, see what they're saying, then see if it. You know, you can kind of, like, look at it less attached.
Right.
With winning the argument or not.
That's good. Yeah, that's powerful. So, you know, we're so egocentric. We so believe that the world revolves around us, you know, and that everyone's supposed to be working off the script that I wrote. We don't ever stop and think that maybe they got a different script, you know, that they're working from. But I talked about that 16 guideline book. They talk about the concept of humility. You know, it's interesting. The terms in there are so seldom used. We make assumptions that people know what those are. But in fact, I mean, we don't teach them in school. We leave that up to, you know, family or church or whatever, Boy Scouts to teach that stuff. But things like humility is a powerful one. And the concept of humility is just, I might be wrong, right? It's not I am wrong. It just means that I'm opened up to listening to somebody else's view, even though it's different than what I believe. And, you know, when we make that little bit of open space to just be open to listen to what somebody else has to say, it can be a game changer. It can change our view of things. It helps us develop a sense of empathy, which is really powerful. And we're using it... In my business, we're working with companies to try to help them become more innovative. And the thesis is that, you know, if I want to share knowledge, if I have a company that we're trying to be innovative, you know, it's not the knowledge that everybody has in their head individually. The value comes in the knowledge that they're willing to share with each other. And the first step in that is humility. You know, if you introduce humility into a meeting, it goes a whole lot better if everybody says, I'm going to be open to what everybody else has to say. I don't mean to get off, but that's a whole different thing. But though, you know, these things begin to kind of bob up. There's a lot of virtues that we have that are part of us. And a lot of it is, you know, overcoming the anger to recognize the patience. You know, anger begins with some level of impatience and irritation and all that kind of stuff. And being able to let go of that is huge. So humility is a powerful tool. The other thing that you said I thought was good, we're funny here in our Western world. We like everything objective and quantifiable. And anything that's qualitative, we tend to fling out. But an emotion is just as valid of a thought as a logical thought. You know, we learn how to be logical through math and school and all that kind of stuff. But we don't teach an emotional intelligence, which is now, you know, it's now we're starting to see more and more of that. But those are valid. We assume that the world operates from a logical, quantitative view, but realistically, we make decisions all the time that are qualitative, based on emotions, who we're going to talk to, who we're not going to talk to, yada, 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 right? and yet we just kind of let that stuff go. We don't find any way to strengthen that and build that and get rid of the negative ones and increase the good ones, you know. But it makes a difference. We're going to work on that here in just a few minutes. But any other thoughts that came out of your discussion? I found something else this evening that this is a book that I'm reading. It's called This Book Will Make You Smarter. It's kind of a crazy title. It's 150 essays from top scientists and different thinkers and from around the world that this guy's compiled. But one of the articles I was reading was kind of fascinating. Have you all seen the, I think they made a YouTube clip out of it. Dr. Mischel, I think is his name. He's a psychologist that did work to look at delayed gratification. And he gave these kids marshmallows, and he'd leave them with a marshmallow, and he said they could have it. But if they waited and didn't eat it, and because he was going to leave the room, when he got back, he'd give them another one. So they'd get two if they waited. If they ate that one, they wouldn't get their second one. Have you all seen that or heard anything about this? So I've seen a little YouTube clip on it. Anyway, so he did this research, and most of these kids ate that first marshmallow pretty quickly. You know, they did all sorts of things. They'd stare at it, and they'd do all sorts of stuff, and they'd battle with themselves, and then they'd finally give up and eat that marshmallow. But there was, I think it was about 20% or so that would delay the gratification, that they would actually wait for him to come back so they could get two marshmallows. And the research on these kids showed that they did a lot better in SAT and they were better at saving and all sorts of kind of stuff, you know. So anyway, this guy wrote an essay about that research. And it was kind of interesting. He said that when they looked at the kids, that these were, they called them high delayers, they all relied on the same mental strategy. They found a way to keep themselves from thinking about the treat by directing their gaze away from the marshmallow. Some covered their eyes or played hide-and-seek underneath the desk. Others sang songs from Sesame Street or repeatedly tied their shoelaces or pretended to take a nap. Their desire wasn't defeated, it was merely forgotten. So Mischel referred to this skill as strategic allocation of attention. And he says it's argues that the skill underlying self-control. He says we assume it's willpower and it's having strong moral fiber, but in reality, it's just redirecting the spotlight of our attention. He said, these correlations demonstrate the importance of learning to strategically allocate our attention. When we properly control the spotlight, we can resist negative thoughts and dangerous temptations. We can walk away from fights, improve our odds against addiction. Our decisions are driven by the facts and feelings bouncing around in our brain. The allocation of attention allows us to direct this haphazard process as we consciously select the thoughts we want to think about. So what they're describing these kids have are really the ability to be able to focus this spotlight of attention that we're talking about in meditation. That's the skill that we're learning, is how we can direct our thoughts towards the things we want to think about, and direct them away for the things that you know that we're trying to resist and whatnot. So, and that's really what it boils down to. So that's what this practice is all about. So, I've got two more meditations that I want to do. One's kind of a visualization, and then we'll do an analytical meditation. So the visualization, maybe that'll help us kind of get our mindset for the analytical. This one is also one of the handouts, be handout number 10. It says purification with light meditation. So what we're going to do for a few minutes is we're going to do a meditation, but the in with the clear light and exhaling the negativities like soot, we're just going to keep that visualization going a little bit longer than just a few breaths, okay? And then if at some point you want to just count your breathing, that's fine. But if you can picture that, and when you picture this light going in, you know, see it kind of pure light going in, see it going into your lungs and you know, the blood picking it up and taking it to every cell in your body. You know, if you can picture as many parts in your body where this light's going. And then when you exhale, just picture all the negativities and impurities, you know, kind of coming together and coming into your lungs and ended up coming out like soot, and it just dissipates out into the sky. Somebody the other day said they picture themselves breathing the soot back in. I said, don't do that. You know, make sure the soot takes off somewhere else. So, you know, get yourself comfortable getting your seven points. Set a little motivation for why you're going to do this meditation. And then whenever you're ready, just start envisioning this white light going in and the negativities going out. If a negative thought comes into your mind, allow that to become part of the negativities and soot that you're exhaling. Sometimes it helps to think of an act of kindness, something somebody did for you, generosity, whatever, and inhaling that as part of that white light. gently bring your mind back, and without trying to maintain that same level of comfort, I want to do an analytical meditation. I've got a bottle of water up here I want everybody to take a look at. Can you all see that? Okay. It's got a little bit of dirt in it. All right. Look at that water for a little bit. And then I want you to close your eyes again. And think about that water for a moment. Imagine what it would be like. Try to really get your mind focused on imagining this. Imagine what it would be like to live in a country, perhaps in Africa, Ethiopia, Somalia, somewhere, Eastern Africa, or anywhere in Africa, South America. And getting up early every morning, getting buckets and containers, and hiking for miles, and coming to this mud hole that your village calls a well. And you climb down into this hole. The water is warm, filthy, filled with bacteria and parasites. And you scoop the water up into a bucket or a container. Then you walk back to your village in the hot sun for miles carrying these buckets. And that's your water. That's your drinking water. And you have to do this every day, regardless of the weather. Sometimes the well has more water in it after rains. The water is a little clearer, not much. Maybe about like this water in the bottle. Sometimes the water levels are low. And it's really bad. And that's your job. If you're a child or a female, often there's no education or no opportunities because you spend all day getting water. And yet you're happy with that water. Now recognize how much of the world population, how many people have water like that to drink. Maybe not quite that bad even. In here in North Raleigh or in Raleigh, if we're thirsty, we walk over to the sink, turn a spigot, get cold water or hot water, we don't particularly care to drink that water. We can get water from a water fountain. Walk over to a wall and push a button on a metal box. Out comes cold water. Many of us don't care to drink that. We buy bottled water. Think nothing of it. Just think how fortunate we're here. We are to have water like that. Yet somehow it's not enough. How did that work? That's an analytical meditation. Were you able to imagine drinking water like that? So, Emmy, you're welcome to this water if you want it. You want to try it?
I could get the water and bring it back, but the drinking it was hard.
Yeah. I've seen pictures of people with smiles on their face drinking water like this. You know, we don't, and the purpose of that, that type of analytical meditation is to, you know, we've got this kind of built-in sense of, I don't want to say greed, but I guess greed is kind of it. We're always looking for something better, right? And we don't ever stop and realize how good we have it. I mean, there always is something better, but we got it pretty darn good. You know, we really do. There's some, Kathleen McDonald's book has got a pretty good meditation on, they call it precious human rebirth. So if you just think about, you know, of course, Buddhists have this belief in rebirth, reincarnation, but even if we exclude that thought process and just think about how fortunate we are, they would include all creatures, all sentient beings. So they would include insects and any kind of creature. But how fortunate we are to have a human birth is such a rare thing, okay? And, you know, if I have dogs and cats, bless you, and, you know, I believe that they have all the feelings and all that kind of stuff. There's whatever's inside there. And I think, what would it be like to be born like that? So if you just look at humans and you think about, you know, boy, I could have been born in a country where that's the water. I could have been born in, there's a lot of countries where war is prevalent. I mean, you don't know if you're going to have a bomb drop on you that day or not. There's a lot of countries where poverty is just kind of a regular thing. You know, I live in North Raleigh. I've got nothing to complain about. I really don't. You know, our teacher says we've got more pet food in our grocery store aisle than most countries they have in their entire grocery store, you know. And I've got a dozen grocery stores around me that I can choose from, and yet still, there's something something lacking. So when we begin to sit, if you take some time to sit and find something that resonates with you, you know, read a passage or find a story or something that evokes an emotion for you, and sit with that from a meditation standpoint, really drill in on what it could be like in another situation, and recognize how fortunate you are to be in whatever situation you currently are. It creates a sense of contentment that is really a comfortable feeling. The last time I did this meditation, I had a gentleman the following week. It was funny. He came back and I was asking, you know, what happened. He said he was out. It was a Sunday afternoon. He was playing golf with some buddies. He said it was beautiful outside, but he was having a bad golf game. And along about halfway during the game, he had a lousy shot and he started to get angry and he was going to do something. And he said, I thought about that water. He said, and I thought, here it is, Sunday afternoon. I'm standing out here knocking a little ball around with a stick. And I'm getting upset because I had a bad shot. He said it just all went away. It just dissipated. He said it didn't improve his game any, really, but it didn't matter anymore. You know, it really didn't matter anymore. He was just kind of present in that moment and realized how fortunate he was. So if you find something like that, that's an emotional response that we can work with and develop. And those are the things that we want to develop, because it gives us a sense of contentment, compassion, empathy, all of the good things, right? And it makes us kind of appreciate our current situation just by recognizing, you know, what else is going on around us. So. Any thoughts? Comments?
It's hard to feel fortunate because I'm geared to feel guilty about having that.
Okay. Guilty?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have poverty here in the United States. We should be solving this problem.
Right.
Shouldn't spend time on how fortunate I am. I should be spending my time fixing it for others.
And that's certainly true, I think. But maybe for a lot of us, the first step, you know, guilt doesn't really do us serve any good, you know. Maybe the first step is developing a sense of empathy for those people that don't have it as well, and just kind of being okay and recognize how fortunate we are. And that's a blessing, you know. And you shouldn't feel guilty necessarily for that. That's a whole different conversation, right? But that might be worth working with a little bit, you know? Yes, sir.
So it seems like in that meditation that you're kind of like cultivating gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You do that for other things also?
You can. You sure can. You know, I mentioned the 16 guidelines that talks about humility. I mean, you can do, I've got little exercises that you can do to develop humility, patience, contentment. This is one that I use for contentment. You know, people, we don't like, I was talking to somebody about, you know, being content, and they said, well, we don't want our people content. And you know, we sometimes, just as an example of how we get those terms confused, we confuse ambition and greed. And we don't recognize that they're two separate things. Ambition is a good thing. You know, aspiration is a good thing. Greed isn't necessarily a good thing. So, but contentment is one of the exercises. Generosity, you know, developing a sense of generosity. I have a friend that goes to the mall and sits and mentally gives stuff away. She doesn't actually give anything away, right? But she just mentally she envisions herself handing out stuff to everybody that walks by. And the sole purpose of that is just to increase her sense of generosity, which is a good thing. You know, there's little things that you can do. Just, you know, there's little random acts of kindness, right? We can build on that and kind of emphasize. So the idea is to kind of emphasize or increase our cognitive ability to understand some of these positive emotions. And it takes practice. It takes practice just like it took practice for us to learn to play a musical instrument or speak or anything else. We have to do them over and over again in our head. They become stronger. So, other comments, thoughts? All right. Yes, sir.
I'm surprised in the analytical meditation I actually had to be mindful. I caught myself going down kind of a negative spiral, but it wasn't guilt. It was more just I could follow the whole the whole scene really well and whatnot. But I got caught in a spiral of just feeling bad for everyone who didn't have water.
Okay.
And I had to be mindful of that and bring it back to more of a joyous gratitude that everyone that I know does.
Yeah.
Which is more useful than just,
that's right.
Well, it sucks that everyone else doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good point. I probably have done this so many times that it doesn't, you know, I keep kind of going deeper and deeper into it. But, you know, don't allow it to become a negative thing. You know, if you start to go that direction, you know, time to back off and find something else to focus on. But the idea is just to develop a sense of how fortunate we are and a sense of gratitude, you know, a sense of gratitude. So, thank you, both of you, for pointing that out. Just, yes, sir.
So, when I just had that, it just kind of like made me realize, like, if you were trying to cultivate love or something, instead of trying to just, like, I feel like a good way to be able to do that would be to have gratitude for the love that you already have, then you kind of, like, be able to get in touch with that before trying to, like, force it something else. So if you're trying to feel something else, have gratitude for that thing already, or that emotion.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah, okay.
If you're like an angry person, like even if you are angry 90% of the day, you're at peace for 10% of the day. So if you feel gratitude for that 10%, then maybe like that will, the peace will grow.
That's right. Yeah, and there's a guy who's doing some work on just writing, just a gratitude, right? Writing a gratitude journal. Write down three, at night, just jot down or think of while you're lying in bed, three things that you're grateful for. And they could be minor little things. You know, I'm grateful for clean water. I'm grateful that I'm still alive. I'm grateful. Just find something to be grateful on. And if you do that, bless you, if you do that nightly, that sense will start growing to the point where you start looking for things to be grateful for. Then you kind of begin to strengthen that neurologically. You actually strengthen that way of thinking. So, 8:31. I hope that wasn't too much of a downer to leave everybody on. But, so. Okay.
Where's the train?
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the train tonight. I kept waiting for it too.
There was?
Okay.
When we were in
groups. Oh, all right. That was it. I zoned out. I wasn't being mindful. So, all right. And take a minute and just, like, to the point of being, like a gratitude journal, right? We'll start the mental gratitude journal. Think of, you know, there's a lot of things you could have done tonight. You chose to come here. You chose to, you know, learn a little bit more about yourself and about each other. And that they would actually, when they look at this concept of precious human birth, rebirth, one of the big things is that we have leisure time that allows us to do things like this, where people in other countries don't have the opportunity to. So that in and of itself is a pretty big deal. You know, here you are. You could have been watching reruns of who know what. Or fetching water, right? So, all right. Everybody be careful going home. Thank you. Good night. You're welcome.